I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Governor Larry Hogan's proposed budget sets aside more than $100 million to fund Baltimore's Red Line, pending a review of the light rail project. With an estimated $3 billion price tag, opponents argue that the Red Line isn't worth the cost. Mass transit alternatives could do the job more efficiently and for less. Supporters say public financing has already been secured. The Red Line's design vetted. They say the project will create thousands of jobs and spur economic development in Baltimore County and the city. Today, we hear from both sides of the Red Line issue, starting with former Maryland Transportation Secretary Jim Smith. He joins us after the news from NPR. Good afternoon once again, and welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. Our two-hour show includes Dr. John Smarr, another visit from our Midday doctor in residence, Dr. John Smarr from Sinai Hospital, also an infectious disease expert, will be with us in the second hour of our show today to talk about the measles outbreak and public health policy regarding vaccinations for childhood diseases. Very controversial right now. John Smarr joins us after the news at 1. In this hour of the show, we're going to take a look at the Baltimore Red Line. Governor Larry Hogan's proposed budget sets aside $106.2 million for Baltimore's Red Line, that transit project, light rail project, pending a reevaluation of it. The $2.9 billion Red Line would create a 14-mile rail line with 19 stations from Woodlawn in western Baltimore County to Bayview in southeastern Baltimore City. The Maryland Transit Administration believes more than 54,000 people would ride the Red Line each day by the year 2035. The Baltimore City Department of Transportation believes about 9,000 jobs would be created in the construction of the project. Last month, Maryland's 9 Democratic members of Congress sent a letter to Governor Hogan in support of the Red Line. The letter reminded Governor Hogan that if Maryland signs a full funding grant agreement, the federal government will provide $900 million, starting with up to $100 million this year. Baltimore City and Baltimore County have pledged combined $280 million in local funding for the project. Today, we hear the pros and cons of the Red Line. Has Maryland invested too much to turn back now? Is this light rail project the best way to connect the city and with the county and fix Baltimore's traffic woes and serve the public? You're welcome to join us today as well. Call in with a question or comment for our guests, 410-662-8780. We start our show with now, I guess I say, freshly former Maryland Transportation Secretary Jim Smith, former Baltimore County executive as well, but freshly former meaning he was Transportation Secretary until just about a week or so ago. It's nice to have you on the show, Jim Smith.
Good to be here.
The acting secretary now, the secretary chosen by to be your successor by Larry Hogan, says he has an open mind as he considers whether the state should go ahead with both the light rail projects, the Purple Line and the Red Line. We're going to talk about the Red Line today. Pete Rahn is his name, R-A-H-N, who served as a transportation secretary in a couple of states, New Mexico and Missouri, before he came here. He said he has an open mind about this and he won't be guided by Larry Hogan's campaign promises to block construction. So he's going to study it. Now, I know it's been studied for a long time. So a little bit of background here, Jim Smith. Speaking of studying, how far back does the Red Line idea go?
It goes back 12 years to 2002.
So you were county executive in Baltimore County during part of that time.
I was indeed. In fact, during a lot of that time, I was county executive from 2002 to 2010. So obviously, and a lot of groundwork was laid during those 12 years. A lot of study was done. This has been a project that has been taken very seriously. But one of the reasons it's taken so seriously is because it's so exciting. I mean, you don't know too many successful metropolitan areas that don't have a mass transit network. And Baltimore does not. It has the three north-south lines of the MARC, the light rail, and the subway, but they take you only a certain place you want to go.
Right.
And you don't always want to go to that place. You want to go to other places. So we really need an east-west light rail to connect to the three existing mass transit infrastructure that we have. And that's really what the Red Line will give us. And it really is, it's an exciting opportunity. I mean, we've had lots of challenges. And throughout this entire effort, we are constantly reminded of all the challenges that we have. And that's okay. But if you look at the challenges up to today, we have met the challenge, conquered the challenge, and moved to the next challenge. I mean, there was much thought that we'd never get a $900 million full funding grant agreement from the federal government, and we would never get a $100 million in the 2016 federal budget. Well, we did, and that really makes this project possible. We've been through the environmental impact statement. We've gotten our record of decision. I mean, people said you would never get the record of decision. Well, we did. And
we'll never get the requisite
record of decision.
Record of decision.
Which you have to have on the environmental issues or you can't move forward. And you certainly can't get any money from the FTA. So it really, it has been a project which has been a reach and a challenge, but all along the way, as the challenges arose, they were met and we moved on to the next challenge. And we're on the verge now of actually having the Red Line.
The Federal Transportation Administration wants to move as many people as possible for the money as it can. That seems to be the basic model of the FTA. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So they've signed on to this project. There aren't many projects of this scale from what I see and from my reading in the country presently.
There are not. In fact, the interesting thing is this is a New Starts project. There were only six New Starts projects approved in the country, and Maryland got two of them. And everybody said, that'll never happen. But we got
The other one is the Purple Line.
The other one's the Purple Line in Prince George's and Montgomery County. And they're as excited as most people in Baltimore are excited.
Let's just do this for our listeners who need to be reminded, as I do from time to time, about the route of the Red Line. So why don't we start over on the west side, Jim, and just sort of drive along, right along here until we get to the southeast Baltimore. On the west side, we're over on, and by the way, folks, if you go to the Dan Roderick's Facebook page, you can find an easy link to an interactive map of the Baltimore Red Line. It'll show you all this. We're going to quickly describe it. Over on the west side, Jim, we're over near this Social Security Administration area.
A little bit beyond Social Security, you're at the CMS campus. Centers for Medicaid and Medicare.
Thank you very much.
And then you move to Security Square, then you move to the park and ride, and then you move through
the big old park and ride, you mean there, that's on the
at 70.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So it goes from there. So you could actually drive and park there and use the light rail. That's part of the idea.
Right, excepting that it's anticipated that that park and ride will be developed into a transit-oriented development site, at least to a significant degree. That's one of the exciting things about the Red Line for Baltimore, and that is that it's opening up so much opportunity for development, but also for redevelopment, and that will provide thousands of square foot of offices, hundreds of residential units all along the Red Line. And you go to Edmondson, then you go to Rosemont, and then you go to, you end up going to Howard Street. And
all through downtown.
All through downtown.
It follows along the so-called Highway to Nowhere on the west side, right?
It does. And then it follows all the public right-of-ways, basically. One of the important things is avoiding as many challenges as you can, basically. And if you follow the public right of way, you're number one, cutting down your right of way costs. And number two, you're not involving yourself in structures, and that's very, very important. Not to, because the most of the right of ways we're getting for the red line are subterranean, not going through near people's going under people's houses.
We should tell you the part of the plan is a 3.4 mile or so
tunnel
through that goes through the downtown Baltimore area, right?
Exactly.
And comes out on the southeast side.
Comes out
near Harbor East, not sort of near Harbor East, near Fells Point.
Near Canton.
Near
Canton. Gotta,
comes out near Canton.
Yeah, right.
And then there's this spur, sort of dog legs a little bit to the north, headed toward the Bayview area.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That's,
it hits in Highland Town, Greek Town, and then goes to Bayview. And that's a contact for the MARC line, and there's another MARC contact at the west. I can't think of it.
You mean where the MARC line is? It's over on the Route 40, that
west
highway to nowhere section.
Yeah, West Baltimore.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, when the county executive, Kevin Kamenas, was on our show in December, he brought up this a couple of points that made him question whether we should be building the red line. One of them was costs, although Baltimore County apparently has agreed some $50 or close to $60 million a contribution. Maybe it's closer to $50 million a contribution toward this. But he said, among other things, there are no hubs. The red line will not intersect with existing light rail. I was a little surprised to hear him say this because you can look at a map and see that the red line does intersect with the present north-south light rail.
It does. And he may have gotten that from some of the opponents to the red line who have said that in their materials, that there is no connection north-south to the light rail. And it's right at Howard Street. I mean, there is a light rail.
The idea that there are no hubs, though, you just described one, which would be out on the west side of Baltimore County, right?
Sure.
Would there be other hubs?
Oh yeah, there's.
Another one would be, I guess, Howard Street, maybe, where it intersects with light rail or not.
You've got you have the West Baltimore MARC station. You have the biopark, the medical biopark for University of Maryland.
Near Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Exactly. You have numerous developments, Harbor East, Fells Point. I mean, there's a
and then Bayview
map
at the end.
And Bayview at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, there are about, I'd say 35 developments, redevelopments, expansions, all along the red line.
Answer this question for me, because this is another thing Kevin Kamenas said. He said if this happens, he said there'll be no money for new transportation trust fund projects if the red line is built. Now, the transportation trust fund is several billions of dollars, is it?
$4.4 billion.
So you know, you're former Secretary of Transportation. You'll know better than I do. What do you think of that statement?
Well, it's just not—it's not accurate. I mean, the out of the $4.4 billion new money, 52% went to transit, and that's the Purple Line and the Red Line, and some rapid bus rapid transit. 48% went to highways. That's almost half of the $4.4 billion. And 1% went to the Port of Baltimore and the airport. So to suggest that the transit is eating up all of the Infrastructure Investment Act, it's just not accurate.
Jim Smith is with us for the remainder of the hour, the former transportation secretary for the state. We're talking about the Red Line project here. In a few minutes, we're going to be hearing from Marty Taylor. He's going to join us. He's president of the Right Rail Coalition, which opposes the Red Line as it is currently designed. So we'll get to hear at least his views on that. And we invited Marty in here so we can hear him out, because every time we do a show on the Red Line, we hear from people who have problems with the route of it, the plan, the design. How far along are we, actually? I've talked about the money part of this, but in terms, and you mentioned some of the approvals, but in terms of percentage of being toward 100% total approval to move ahead, where would you say we are?
We're probably 80%.
What remains?
What remains is to develop the bid proposal for a number of features of the Red Line, and also the bid proposal for the public-private partnership, and then to put that out for bid, to evaluate, we'll probably do the same process that we used for the Purple Line, shortlist bidders, because you want people of substance, which is what we have on the Purple Line. We anticipate the same. There's the same interest in the Red Line that there has been for the Purple Line, and then it's a matter of letting the contract. I mean, construction should begin in 2016.
How many jobs are we talking about? I see. You know, you heard me mention.
Well, there's 9,000.
Is 9,000 an operative number that they use
for
this?
That is for the construction phase, but for the impact economically on Baltimore and the all the projects that are underway or anticipated because people have made investments along the Red Line, it's hundreds and hundreds of more jobs at stake.
That's to get the thing built. And how long do they think it would take to build to complete the
Red Line?
It'll
be open. It should be open by 2022.
Okay. Big project. 410-662-8780. Before we go to the break, let's hear from one of our callers, because folks are lined up to call and make comments about the Red Line today. Michael in Baltimore, you're on the air. Go right ahead, please.
Hi. I would just like to say that I'm a huge Red Line supporter, and one of the big problems I've had with the Right Rail Coalition and, you know, the Transit Riders Action Council and all these opposition groups is that they keep discussing alternatives. And I'd just like to point out that right now, here we have a shovel-ready project, and it's not a function of do we build this or do we build metro or do we build streetcars. It's like, do we build this or do we set back planning another 10 years and anticipate costs to double? And kind of on that note of costs doubling, another big controversy with the Red Line is that people are saying it's inefficient to build a separate light rail tunnel through downtown when we already have a metro tunnel. But as costs escalate in the future, we wouldn't be able to build a new tunnel. And it's also really unlikely that we'd be able to extend metro, which is more expensive. And having a separate tunnel is actually really good for transit systems. There's, you know, if you look at Washington, D.C., they're built on the classic hub and spoke model where, you know, if one line closes for like track repairs or something, it disrupts the whole system.
Michael's making a reference to the metro tunnel that already
right.
exists that goes over towards Johns Hopkins.
Right.
Right.
There's another problem with the metro tunnel, too. It doesn't accommodate the light rail cars.
Oh, speaking of that, and we have to go to a break. I have more questions for you. People who are used to riding the light rail now,
right.
North and south, they would see a different kind of vehicle?
Yes.
In this design?
Oh, this is a sleek, very modern-looking, they're beautiful cars.
Yeah, Jim Smith is with us, until recently, Secretary of Transportation for the state of Maryland. Marty Taylor from the Right Rail Coalition. You just heard a reference to the Right Rail Coalition. They oppose the current design and have some of their own ideas about the Red Line, and urging the governor to not approve this plan. But so we'll hear from Marty Taylor after this short break and from our listeners. So please call in if you have questions about the Red Line. 410-662-8780. Coming up on a big decision about whether the state should spend the money and go ahead with this. So please, if you have a question about it, give us a ring. And welcome back. It's midday. Dan Rodericks here with, until recently, Maryland Transportation Secretary Jim Smith, former Baltimore County Executive as well. And now we're joined by Marty Taylor, president of the Right Rail Coalition, which opposes the Red Line as currently designed. Marty, nice to have you on the show with us.
It's good to be here. Thank you very much.
How long have you been at this, the Right Rail Coalition? I mean, been hearing about you guys for a few years. So
I got involved initially 7 or 8 years ago. I live in the Canton area, although not for much longer, and I went to a community meeting, which was the first time I heard about it. And at that point, there were still a lot of options on the table. And I have an engineering background, and I just asked a couple of simple questions about what was going on. And the answers that I got back made very little sense, so I kept asking more questions.
What was your main concern in the beginning there?
Well, my main concern initially was that one of the options was a tunnel that was going to come out quite close to my house. But then as I learned about it, what I found was that the details of the project didn't support the conclusions that people were drawing from them. And the things that were being said about the project didn't really add up to the actual project. And I think that problem has actually only gotten worse over the years.
Give us an example of what you mean. It doesn't move enough people fast enough?
Yeah, so that's actually speed and capacity are huge problems. So people think this is going to be a subway like what they see in D.C. or New York. But under the most rosy estimates that the MTA has, this thing only goes 18 miles an hour. A quick bus averages about 13 to 15 across town, and a real subway is over 30. So essentially, it's half as fast as a subway, and it's only a little bit faster than a bus. And most people that would ride this actually get off of a bus to take it. Almost none of the projected riders are people that wouldn't have been on transit before. So basically, most people have to make at least one, and if not two, extra transfers on their bus route for the Red Line. But then they wait for their transfer, and then they get on a train that's a slow train that wasn't moving much faster than their bus was before. Even the city buses that are only like average about 11 miles an hour, to get onto a train going 18, but to wait for it, it's a big difference.
Well, let me ask you this then, because my first question after what you just said would be, what's the alternative? If I want to get from, do you think this is not a good idea to provide more transportation, rail transportation, from the west side to the east side or southeast side or vice versa?
So I'm still in this now after 7 or 8 years, and I'm a full-time medical scientist. So this is something that I do because I think it's a huge problem in Baltimore, and I'm passionate about this city. The biggest problem in Baltimore for development, at least one of them, is lack of transit. And I'm a strong advocate for more transit. I just think that if we build this project, it's the wrong move. That if this project is built as currently planned, because of all of the compromises that have been made to make this happen sort of as drawn, a very narrow-minded approach, and I can talk a little bit about that later if you're interested. But because of these compromises, what ends up happening is that we spend now well over $3 billion for a project that doesn't get you essentially anywhere better than you could have gotten there before. There's no need for a single-seat ride to take you all the way from Social Security to Bayview. Even by the MTA data, almost none of the projected riders do that. People from the west side want to get downtown. People from the east side want to get downtown. People from downtown want to go both places, but very rarely does somebody from the west side want to go all the way to the east side. And when they do, one transfer should be suitable to do it.
People who work at, say, Johns Hopkins or even the Bayview part of Johns Hopkins, who are used to now driving all the way around the Beltway to get there from, say, I don't know, Woodlawn, Dickeyville, someplace out there on the west side, southwest side, even Howard County.
Sure.
What about them? Wouldn't they benefit from that?
So I've spent 10 years at Johns Hopkins and have worked at both the main hospital and at Bayview. And most people that work at Bayview live pretty close. And the ones that don't, the Red Line doesn't really help them get there. And then if what's actually really needed for Hopkins is a connection between the main hospital and Bayview, the Red Line doesn't help the main hospital at all. Because to get to the main hospital from Bayview, if you try to look at this on the map, what you have to do is you actually have to go all the way to Charles Center, where the underground tunnel that's kind of people are touting as a connection between the Red Line and the Metro, but doesn't work very well and prevents a real transit hub from being built. You have to go all the way to downtown, and then you have to go all the way back over to Hopkins. It takes about twice as long as the current Hopkins shuttle.
So before we go to Jim Smith, then, my question would be, what's the alternative? What is the Right Rail Coalition suggested in its place?
Well, There's a lot of alternatives that make sense, one of which could be built almost immediately, which is to use the West Side Red Line engineering, but to build a much better red line on the West Side. So what's happened to the West Side Red Line is because of compromises that are needed to make the tunnel costs not so high, in addition to pulling a whole bunch of stations that were originally planned, what they've done is they've shrunk the trains to little tiny two-car trains, which are about the same width as a city bus. And then what they've done is they've spent almost no money on development all the way along. So the Highway to Nowhere, which the judge spoke of before, Judge Smith, is really an open scar in West Baltimore, the remnants of the road project of the 60s, and is one of the areas that's most in need of real investment. But what happens is that they just bury this line in the middle of the ditch, and there's no real development that's there. If you look at our website, there's a vision that we have, a lovely rendering by Mark Sarkowski, that shows what real development could look like.
Couldn't that come in years, though, once you put the rail in place?
Not really, because if you run the rail up the middle.
It's a nice picture, I'll say that, Marty, yeah. But to think that all that could happen in a short period of time, why not just get the line established first? Because your drawing includes the line.
It includes a modified version of the line. But the problem with the line is that the $3 billion price tag is the lowest amount of money that this could possibly cost. It's probably going to be a heck of a lot more than that. If you look out at Seattle, what's happened with their tunnel boring right now, they have a new tunnel that was supposed to replace a viaduct. They built a machine called Bertha, which is the best, biggest tunnel boring machine ever made. It went about 1,000 feet of the 8,000 it was supposed to go before getting stuck, and that was 18 months ago. And then a couple of months ago, they've been digging down. There's no reverse gear on the machine, so they can't back it up. So they've been digging straight down to this tunnel boring factory, and they've been pumping the water out to do it, to get down there. And what happened a couple of months ago is that the entire historic Pioneer District fell by an inch. It's settled.
I want to go to Jim Smith, because you covered a lot of ground there, Marty, yeah. And I made some notes there. So, Jim, you can respond any way you like, but specifically the complaint that it's too slow, doesn't move enough people fast enough, it's not well connected to the other lines, and the tunnel cost could skyrocket.
Okay, well, with regard to it being too slow, 18 miles an hour is not slow when you're talking about light rail. It is slow when you're talking about the difference between light rail and the subway, but that's not what we're building. We're not building a subway. We're building a light rail, and it's well within the range of light rail throughout the country. As far as moving the people, it's estimated to move 54,000 people. By 2030, and frankly, the two cars are adequate to do that. And it's interesting that it seems that Marty would like us to invest a lot more money in the West Side and just not go forward into the East Side. And I don't know what stations he's talking about, but there are 19 stations. As far as Edmondson, you've got the Uplands is in development, which would be fed by the Edmondson station. That's 1,100 units. You have the
1,100
residential
units.
Yes, you've got the West Side Skills Center, which is ready for redevelopment, and you have the Edmondson Village itself, which could be redeveloped in addition. So there's a lots of potential in what is already planned for the Red Line. What was the
cost of the tunnel?
Oh, the cost of the tunnel. We did adjust the cost of the tunnel up because of findings. But now that we have about 65% of the engineering done on the tunnel, we do believe that we've got a handle on it and are not expecting any more adjustments.
Surprises or adjustments?
Yeah.
Well, right. All right, Marty.
They say they'd be surprised if they find any more surprises, which I think is pretty amusing. Because let me just talk about the money for a minute, because there's a lot of misconceptions, and I believe that some of what Judge Smith said is inaccurate. Let me go back to 2008. This project was $1.6 billion. And it was a 50-50 split between federal and state. Essentially, the feds were going to put up a little over $800 million. The state was going to put up $800 million. And the city and county were paying nothing. Now we're over $3 billion without a shovel in the ground. In that time, the project has gotten slower. And the ridership number, The Sun actually printed on Thursday that we're now down to 27,000 daily riders in 2030, which is less than half of the original projection. Unless that was a misprint, but still we're in the 40s, not in the 50,000s. So essentially the price is doubled.
Has ridership projection been scaled back?
I'm not aware of that, so.
There are a number of projections that have been in The Sun that were well under the 54,000 number. Even after taking out special event riders, which dropped us into the 40,000 ridership, we're still much less than was originally projected. And these ridership numbers are actually done by an engineering firm. And the MTA doesn't have any control over them. It's a big black box. They won't let anybody look at them. A number of the delegates involved in the Purple Line have actually been very interested to get into the details, and nobody will let anybody anywhere close. But regarding the money, we're now over $3 billion, and the feds are paying actually, if you adjust for inflation, they're paying less than they were going to pay in 2008. And they have not actually approved a single cent. So there is no full funding grant agreement for the Red Line. There can be no full funding grant agreement for the Red Line until a number of approvals are made and until every dollar and cent is accounted for locally. We actually spoke to the FTA about this on Friday after there was some misinformation published in the Sun article. The Red Line is approved at the current time only for preliminary engineering. Some of those funds can be approved. They're not even in the final engineering phase, which is before they can even get the full funding grant agreement. And they're not approved for final engineering, in part because a major change was made to the line and swept under the table. Mr. Patarakis did not like the location on Central Avenue that had spent about 10 years in planning. He didn't want it near his development. So what he did was he said, you have to move it or I'm going to fight you. So they moved it without community input from Central over to Exeter. And that had to actually realign a whole huge chunk of the downtown tunnel under people's homes in Little Italy. So that big switch, the FTA has not decided yet whether or not the MTA is required to put a supplemental impact statement forward.
Is that correct about that adjustment in the tunnel?
There was an adjustment made, yes, but it doesn't take the line under people's homes in Little Italy. There was a drop of the ball in getting to Little Italy before it was published that the change was going to be made, since then, Little Italy has been totally advised, and we have, as far as my contact, I've had no negative contact from Little Italy since then.
They signed a letter. The entire community association is opposed to this project. And speaking of public support, because that's a big topic, Mr. Smith said earlier that most people in Baltimore are excited. There's a poll right now on the Baltimore Business Journal that has about 3,000 responses. Two-thirds of the people said don't build it as planned.
I'd like to hear from our listeners on this. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Guys, we have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll take some calls and some questions. Please hang on the line, folks. We'll get to you after this short break on Midday. Jim Smith, until recently Transportation Secretary of the State of Maryland. Marty Taylor is President of the Right Rail Coalition. We're talking about the Baltimore Red Line. A short break. I promise we'll be right back. And welcome back. We'll go right to the phone lines on the Red Line with your comments or questions for Jim Smith, former Transportation Secretary of Maryland, or Marty Taylor, President of the Right Rail Coalition. Barker in Essex, thanks for holding. Go right ahead, please.
Yes, I think an alternative route would be more desirable, more economical. Let's take the present Metro Rail Line and bring it up out of the ground north of the Johns Hopkins Hospital terminus. And let's parallel the Amtrak right away eastward with branches going down to Dundalk via Travel Plaza, and another branch going towards Essex and Chase.
Let's hear from Jim Smith on that idea that Barker raised about coming out of the ground where the Metro does on the west side, right. East side, I'm sorry.
Well, there's a number of problems with that. One, our analysis is it will be much more than $3 billion to go in that direction. Number two, there are 50% less people living in that area and apt to live in that area than they are with the red line route that is alignment that is presently planned. And finally, it doesn't get anybody to downtown in the sense that it doesn't get them to Federal Hill, Harbor East. It just doesn't do the job to get them to Baltimore.
Marty, couldn't disagree more. That's actually, if you had to pick a single thing to go forward with in Baltimore for your money, a metro extension east is the best idea there is. So the metro is 7 times higher capacity and twice as fast as the red line. And what you can do is actually even the most recent analysis we saw from the MTA was that it was under $1 billion to do this, so about a third of the price of the red line. And so you could get up most of the area where you would have to tunnel is actually being demolished right now for development in East Baltimore. To be clear, our metro ends under Johns Hopkins. We have the only major rail line that I've been able to identify in the entire world that dies in the middle of a city without the ability to feed into it by buses because you can't park at Hopkins. So extending that out towards Bayview would do two things for downtown. One is that you could get off of I-95 and be at Charles Center in 7 minutes. You could be at the Shot Tower in 5 minutes and walk to Harbor East from there easily. The second thing is that you could actually connect Hopkins and Bayview in 4 minutes, which are the two largest employers in the city. Right now, you have to take a shuttle, and it's quite cumbersome.
Is this all? That's all about cost, then? Is this something that was explored during the 12 years of red line development?
It really was. It was just one of the alternatives that was explored. And, you know, it's interesting. You can walk from Shot Tower to East Harbor East, and yet they're concerned about a 600-foot walk from the light rail to the
metro. In downtown.
In downtown,
yeah,
right.
It's about the same distance, actually.
Chris in Baltimore, go right ahead. We'll hear from you next. Thanks for calling Midday.
So let's assume for a hot minute that there is no contention between the two ideas being bandied back and forth here. I've been curious since I've been hearing about the red line, why its end terminus is Bayview, because if we could get a reliable public transportation system extended out to White Marsh, it would probably triple ridership. And if you've ever been to White Marsh on a weekend, imagine how many cars you could take off the road if we had a reliable source. Because right now, from downtown, an MTA bus out to White Marsh, which throws you off behind IKEA in the middle of nowhere, is sometimes an hour to an hour and 15 minutes one way.
Okay. What do you mean, middle of nowhere? If you were behind the IKEA, is it you mean it's because there's a schlep over to the mall? Anyway, was this ever explored, Jim?
Yeah,
Jim,
they were all. It was a line out to Towson was explored, a line to White Marsh was explored, and you would have to start all over again with trying to do that because the opposition to that was very, very high.
A light rail out to White Marsh?
Yes, was very, very high. People did not want a light rail to White Marsh.
So if you built a heavy rail extension like we were just talking about to extend our metro subway, you can actually get to White Marsh on pennies to the mile next to everything else we've been talking about along existing rail lines. But I wanted to come back to the point of cars off the road, because one of the big myths about the red line is that traffic is better and it takes people out of their cars. If you actually look at the data from the MTA, almost every intersection in Baltimore is worse if the red line is built. Intersections are rated A through F. In the no-build situation, as you get out to 2035, a lot of the intersections get to sort of the C and D rating. But a number of them along the red line.
Who's doing these ratings?
This is MTA.
The engineers?
Actually, I think it was Parsons Brinkerhoff who did this for the MTA. And as you actually look along Boston Street and along Edmondson Avenue, a lot of those ratings go to E and F. And in the West Baltimore area, that was assuming two lanes in Franklin and Mulberry. I'm sorry, not Franklin and Mulberry. The next street over, Frederick, which has actually been narrowed since the red line was built. So a lot of cars previously got displaced onto Frederick. And then since they did the analysis, they took a lane out of that road. So that was where most of the cars that couldn't get where they were going were going. And now that that analysis already showed the red line was worse than building nothing. And now the analysis isn't even totally valid anymore.
Chris, in the Patterson Park area, you're on Midday. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon, guys. Just two quick points. First of all, The red line is going to be on Boston Street, so there's nobody south of it that lives, you know, in the water. So how is that serving, you know, the most people that it could? And secondly, why is it on Boston Street where it comes out, where there's already so much traffic? Why couldn't it be on a less traveled street? And I guess on another point is, did you guys look at electric buses with dedicated lines? I mean, that's, you could get a lot more bang for the bucks, and you know, you're able to.
You mean dedicated lanes, right?
Dedicated lanes, yeah. Where the traffic lights are synchronized.
Okay, let's ask those questions of Jim Smith. Boston Street, this question comes up every time we talk about Red Line.
Well, Boston Street is the line that was approved in the Record of Decision. Other Eastern Avenue and other routes were considered. They were rejected for any number of different reasons. So it's just that is where we have to have the line come out in order to reach Bayview, Hopkins, and
electric buses with dedicated lanes. This is something that Kevin Kamenetz had proffered when he was here.
Any idea that is moving forward can always be challenged by any number of other ideas. If we were starting from scratch, perhaps we would look at different options, because we did look at different options. We looked at all the options. People talk about streetcars. Streetcars are no good at all for the use that the Red Line is intended to meet. So all I can say is that there's a million ways to kill a project, and suggesting a million different things that could be done is one way to do it. But quite frankly, this is a project that has had 12 years worth of thought in it. $200 million has already been spent on it, and it is a project that will make a tremendous difference to metropolitan Baltimore.
Marty, everything you're talking about today, Marty Taylor, you said you've been at this personally 7 or 8 years. You've made yourself heard during the public input parts of this project?
Well, I think...
Did the public officials hear you
to
before?
To the extent that anybody was heard, they had a plan that they were going to build, and they didn't really care too much about what anybody said. I think there's no evidence of any changes made to the line in any substantial way based on public input. I want to get back to one thing, though, which is that the idea that this project is close to being done, it's not even anywhere near it. So to get any federal money, every dollar and cent has to be accounted for. Under the last accounting, under the previous administration, we were at the very best $600 million away from having enough money on our end. And now we're quite a bit farther than that. So the idea that we're so close is a little bit silly. It's quite a misstatement, and it's very misleading. There's a lot of time and money that have been spent. Some of that could be used for something that actually makes sense. But the reason there's no Red Line being built right now is because it's so expensive and it doesn't make sense. So,
well, what does make sense? I want to give you another chance here before the hour's up.
Well, there's
what is the alternative to the Right Rail Coalition? Describe it for us.
So what we think makes the most sense is to build an improved Red Line in West Baltimore that connects to a real transit hub, likely at Lexington Market, which has knockouts in the walls designed precisely for that idea.
Meaning a tunnel?
Yes, a very short tunnel, about 2 blocks long, that connects in on the mezzanine level, and you would just get off of the Red Line, and anybody who wanted to get farther downtown could just transfer, like they do at any transit hub, from one platform to the other. Okay. A transit hub like that doesn't exist.
So that's where your idea of the right rail ends,
the existing,
on the west side?
On the west side, exactly.
What about on the east side?
So then what you do is you go back to what the previous caller suggested, which is you extend the metro. And
okay.
Extending the metro could look like a line to Bayview. It can go up to North Avenue. It can go out to White Marsh and Middle River, depending on how you follow the right-of-ways. All of those are pretty good options. The best part about what we're suggesting is that it can be built in phases, and you can actually use the Red Line engineering that's been done and go forward on the west side almost immediately. And if you had to, you could do it without federal money, because the total cost would be about $2 billion less. And the federal money only covers about $900 million of that under the very best-case scenario. And that money isn't even approved.
Okay,
the money's not close to approved.
A point on that. Brian O'Malley, who is president of the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance and has been on our show here. He writes in to point something out that the project has not yet reached the full funding grant agreement milestone, but it does have a recommendation for a full funding grant agreement from the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration. No project that has reached this stage has failed to proceed to a full funding grant agreement. That is why Senator Mikulski, Senator Cardin, Congressman Cummings, and other members of the Maryland congressional delegation speak of this $900 million opportunity. Matt in Bolton Hill writes to say the best advantage light rail has over buses is schedule reliability because most of the light rail route is not shared with general traffic. Trains are not slowed down by traffic as much. Buses, unfortunately, are often slowed and have atrocious on-time performances. Light rail's higher reliability attracts many riders who don't take the bus because bus schedules are so unreliable.
Just one other point. I don't know why Marty keeps saying it's not funded. It is funded, it's in the consolidated transportation program of the state of Maryland, which was submitted by the governor as part of his budget. I've heard you say that in the past, and I just don't understand why you say that.
Well, because it has to add up. So it's partly funded. But if you don't have every dollar you need locally, the feds won't pay. And we're short $600 million at the very least.
We're not short $600 million. We have over the six-year period of the CTP, the Consolidated Transportation Program, we have the $648 million committed to this project, and then there is out years, the balance of that is also committed. So to say that the funding isn't there, the funding is there from the federal government, from the state government, from Baltimore County and Baltimore City, and the public-private partnership, which is going to raise the balance of the money.
You said the other day that you didn't even know what the public-private partnership for this would look like. That was a couple months ago. But the idea of a public-private partnership for the Red Line that currently exists is that the state would dig the tunnel, and then somebody else would come through and build the rest of the line on top of the tunnel. It's a risk mitigation idea. No contractor in their right mind is going to say, I trust the tunnel you dug, and if you made a mistake, I'll pay the money for it. It's a really, really ambitious idea. There's no record of that being done anywhere in the world like this.
I know you you say with complete confidence that nobody would ever get involved in constructing that, and you're just incorrect.
Well, the company Fluor just declined to bid on it. It's a big transportation company. This is a really speculative idea that you have all the money, and it's a lot of money to hinge on speculation.
Marty Taylor, I'm assuming the Right Rail Coalition will take its questions, issues, and ideas to the new administration in Annapolis, which is going to be evaluating this over the coming months.
We are.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for being here. We posted a link to the Right Rail Coalition's website. You can see some of their drawings, ideas. There's a lot on their website if you want to take a look at that. Also, the Baltimore Red Line website is there. The map is there. There are renderings, drawings as well, and more information about the status of all this. So thank you very much for being here. Marty Taylor from the Right Rail Coalition, thanks for your time. And Jim Smith, thank you for being here. Now former Transportation Secretary in Maryland, thank you very much for the time. You've come on our show to explain these things. We've been over the Red Line a couple of times. It's nice to have you back with us.
Good to be here.
Yep, thank you very much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our midday. That's our first hour. We have another hour of midday coming up. Midday on Health with Dr. John Smarr will be with us. We'll be talking about the measles outbreak and public policy related to vaccinations. We'll take a break here for lunch. Marty and Jim get lunch from Rosina Gourmet. Since 1999, Rosina Gourmet has served handmade, locally sourced ingredients for their sandwiches, soups, salads, and vegetarian items. Rosina Gourmet is located in Canton, downtown Baltimore. Canton, see that? Downtown Baltimore and Harbor East. Catering available at Rosina, R-O-S-I-N-A, gourmet.com. Please stay tuned for the news, and then we'll see you for the second hour of our show.